first off, I'd just love to welcome you here.
Thanks
a lot for coming. Welcome into the region, by the way.
Thank you.
I know that's a relatively recent, you're a relatively recent addition to our great region. So first off, just tell me about Adam. Who are you? what would anybody want to know, need to know, be interested in knowing?
Yeah, I think one of the first things I usually tell people that might throw people off a little bit is I come from a unique background. So my early life growing up, I grew up in North Minneapolis, which was very inner city at the time and still is. It's crime ridden. It was one of the worst United States during the 80s and early 90s when I was growing up there. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of hope or choices for folks like me. You just kind of went by the motions. You know, a lot of people fall into the gang involvement, the crime. There wasn't a whole lot. I was fortunate, very fortunate. I had three older brothers that were amazing and a mom who was like the Irish matriarch.
Got it.
Manners meant everything, and if you got grass stains in your jeans, you better just stay outside because you don't want to come home like that. So I was very fortunate that she helped rule the house with an iron fist, which kept me out of trouble, and we all kept each other slightly out of most troubles.
Yeah, I mean, there's no kids that's ever out of trouble. I've had four myself, so even the sort of perfect ones are almost problematic at times.
Exactly. And it wasn't until around middle school where I started to find my groove. I was always fast at running, like incredibly. I think it's because I had three giant older brothers that would chase me around, so I had to learn to be faster than them. And it was my oldest brother was in high school track at the time, and told my high school or his high school coach, and goes, "I think we need to get my little brother in here." And he's like, "Yeah, he's a seventh grader, but he's faster than me." And my coach ended up becoming my coach. Goes, "Oh, let's go check him out." So I'm running against these 11th and 12th graders as a seventh grader doing time trials, and I ended up running for high school track. And at that moment, he was instrumental in my life. His name is Coach Keith Turner.
Okay.
Instrumental in my life. He really took me under his wing and showed me what it needs to be a man, to be a leader in this society. But he really was the first person to shed light on hope. There's a thing called college that I could be the first person in my family to achieve. And I had this never in my life before that I thought that was even obtainable. Yet then it became a reality. And through the course of him mentoring me throughout this whole process, it really, all of a sudden I'm getting track scholarships, I'm getting offers, and I'm like, oh, this is becoming scary now.
Yeah,
like now
this is real.
This
like,
is real.
I'm really succeeding.
Yeah, and at times like I almost wanted to self-ambush and sabotage myself because I didn't know, it was such an uncomfortable world for me to think about. But with support from my grandfather, mom, brothers, and my track coach, I was able to go to college. And then had to learn to navigate on my own because I had no one to call back to. It's not like my mom or dad or brothers or anybody else in my family have ever gone to college. So this is a new venture for myself.
You can't call home and be like, hey, what was it like for you guys?
Yeah,
like, I don't know. We worked.
Yeah, how do you pick housing? How do you have roommate conflict? Things like that. And but it was nice for me because I really got to kind of carve out who I wanted to be. And I remember it was so important. It was my very first class, one of those freshman classes that everybody has to take. And we had to figure out what is our legacy that we want to leave behind when we pass away.
And so there's a deep question for a freshman.
And it was like, because the premise was that's going to set our motion for what we're going to do for college.
Okay.
And so we had to write this long, like kind of one page description of things that we would like to do. And then there's a process where you had to take that, narrow it down into a small paragraph. And then narrow that paragraph down into two words. And the two words that, and I still have it hanging on my desk, is large impact. That's what my legacy is. So if I don't make large impact, then I'm not even being true to myself.
Yeah.
So I took that premise and said, okay, now what am I going to do? So going through college, I just kept thinking, it's not just about getting a degree. It's not just about being excellent at your job. It's like, what else at a large scale can I make impact? So I've never been shy. As far as being, I guess you would say, I wouldn't say anti-authority, but I've never had worrisome about standing up to things I didn't believe were
the right way it should be.
Absolutely. Like, you know, my grandfather used to always say, it takes a big man to stand up for himself, but it takes a bigger man to stand up for others. And he goes, and there's going to be
awesome.
Yeah. He used to always say, there's going to be a moment in your life where you're not going to stand up for others and it's going to haunt you. And I remember that happened once when I was in, I think, eighth or ninth grade. And I was like, I don't like that feeling.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let that happen again.
I never want to feel that again.
No.
Yeah.
And so it's been kind of my mission to really look at avenues of large impact, whether it was tackling socioeconomic status type things. Even working when I was a union member, I ended up becoming like a pretty loud voice for the for our union party, which was the Teamsters at the time.
Okay.
And then ended up going to Steelworker Union and really just trying to be the advocate, because I was a young kid. I knew if they were going to fire me or didn't like me, it's not, you know, it's not my livelihood.
Yep.
Where some of these people have been there for 20 plus years, this is their livelihood.
Yep. And they can't fight. They can't speak out. Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, I'm finding kind of my niche. I can kind of challenge the status quo and the systematic approaches we look at. And so that's really what shaped my, I guess you would say, perception of how I run my businesses and my organizations. And even before that, when I was in education, really how I set up a classroom, how I set up a school as a principal when I was there, really looking at what do we need to do.
And let's get to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me about coming to the United Way here. You've previously been with United Way and other organizations. Tell me about your perspective from United Way standpoint and what you feel like that, you know, driver, maybe chip on your shoulder, I'm going to go prove myself all the time.
Yeah.
What's that mentality bring to United Way here?
You know what's interesting too, when I first joined with the United Way, I first was on a board. And I don't think they liked me in my first time as United Way, because for some reason I had a flawed perception of what United Ways were. And I was sitting on this board years ago, I mean this is over a decade ago, and I remember them talking about kind of these filler band-aid type projects that United Way was doing at the time. This is in Minnesota when I was living there, so not this one. But they were really talking about, we're going to give every kindergartner a backpack and school supplies. And I'm like, well, how long have you been doing that? Oh, for 30 years. And I'm like, why? Let's look at, why do all these kids need school supplies and backpacks? And let's make it appropriate. Let's make sure we can figure out the root cause. And I realized I was kind of playing devil's advocate. And like, no one was venturing with me on this journey. And I'm like, okay, this is odd to me. So as I started in my nonprofit career, I still had this kind of perception of United Ways that they're just fillers and band-aid projects. They're not really looking at making change. It's kind of gimmicky, I guess you'd say. And then I realized when I got convinced to join as a CEO of a former United Way, then I realized they're not that way. There are some out there, but a lot of them are really trying to be the instruments of change in their communities. And I felt like this is where I can fit in. So in my last United Way, I was able to really make some pretty monumental changes in a really difficult area. So coming here, I got to be really picky. I knew living in rural Arizona was, I had about a 3 to 5 year shelf life, and I told them that when they hired me. And that's what I made it to 4 years, and I'm like, okay, no more. I don't think I can make it the fifth year, start looking for new opportunities. And I started really thinking about what matters to me the most, and it's the Midwest values. I miss that living in Minnesota. I miss that sense of community that is true to the Midwest. And so I started putting out job, you know, feelers out there to see what's available. And it, unbeknownst to me, I ended up getting 5 interviews, which felt crazy at the same time, for 5 different positions. Got offered 5 jobs at the same time.
Wow.
And I'm like,
great situation to be in.
Yes. And it allowed me to be really picky about where I really wanted to be. Because people always ask me, why Northwest Indiana? Like, yeah. Oh my God, I mean, and I tell them it's not the money.
It's not exactly Palm Beach or Miami, right? Or, you know.
And I was
Scottsdale.
Absolutely. And so I just tell them, like, I said, there's a sense when you leave the Midwest, you can start reflecting on what you miss. And when the board brought me up here for my final interviews and I got to explore, they sent me up here for a handful of days so I can meet people and explore before I made my ultimate decision. I really saw that people here were so connected to each other and so connected to their communities. And that's what really is like, this is what I want. There's challenges in every community, but if we don't have a sense of community or a sense of belonging, then there's no point. We cannot make change. And so I was like, this is an opportunity that I can't pass up. I see us as a right position. I was part of a merger in a prior United Way, so I have that experience come into this one. And I see this as a ripe opportunity for us really to merge as a whole community and look at this from a larger perspective than just from town to town to town.
Your approach, I think, calls for almost constant questioning. Like, just let me just walk into the situation and what could be different? What could be better? What isn't good that needs to be better? Or, and what's good that could be great? And I think we shared some observations earlier just about sometimes when you come in with that fresh approach, not everybody's even eager for a fresh approach. They're like, but wait, we did it this way forever, and isn't that just the right thing to do? How do you engage with those groups to say, hey, listen, just drop your defenses for a little bit. We actually might be all better off working together.
Yeah, and I think that's...
But you got to be open to that possibility.
They do.
Yeah.
And there are some people where tradition means more than anything, and that's okay. And I have to deal with that in any aspect of my careers. You know, there are people that are willing to change on a fly, and there's people that it takes time. And I don't disrespect that at all. I really do. The people that need a little more time to come to the table, I work with them and keep them as part of this communication channel to show them the possibilities, to explore, to invite them to events, to invite them to different impacts so they can see firsthand, like, oh, there are possibilities to go outside of my comfort zone to make change. But those that are willing is really bringing them together to explore what can we do together versus alone to really make change. I think what's the saying, I always screw this up, but it's something like, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, work together.
Yeah.
And that's the philosophy I live by. Like, yeah, we can just work in our silos and get our organization to lightning warp ahead, but our impact at a large scale is just not there.
Yeah.
And so it does. It slows it down to work together, but together we're going to make the large change. And if we make large change and it starts impacting us as a region, now we're going to see economic growth. We're going to see lower crime, lower substance abuse, lower domestic violence, increase in education attainment. I mean, it's endless possibilities of where we can go with this. And I think that's the exciting thing when I've been talking to people is there's way more people that are receptive to let's work together. I've been waiting for someone to get us out of our silos. There hasn't really been a leadership in an organization to drive that force yet. And I think that's where us as United Way can really lay a hand and expertise, and it's really being that neutral group to bring these groups together to start working on a common focus and make some impact.
Because whether it's food or after school programs or healthcare, there's a lot of people trying to help, but they're probably almost vying sometimes like competitors or turf protectors, and you're like, hey, listen, there's a lot of turf to cover. How about we all just work together so we don't duplicate anything, but ultimately we net help more people.
Absolutely, and I think a lot of nonprofits are getting a little savvy about this too now, because donors are almost, a lot of donors are requiring that, of that partnership. So, well, who are you partnering with on this? What agencies are you working with? Oh, just by yourself? They're reluctant to fund, but they're gonna fund if, you know, I remember being in my last United Way, and we were the largest funder in our entire region by far. And that was the thing we would look at, like who's partnering with who. If you're working at five agencies that come and apply for one grant through us, we're like, wow, this is incredible. Even though it might be a $750,000 request, we can see the impact and we can scale that. So we're like, yes, we'll write you a check. But if they came individual and asked us for $100,000 each, we'd be like, nah, it doesn't really seem fair.
Yeah.
And I think this is where a lot of these foundations and donors are really going. They want to see this collective energy because for them, they see that it makes impact, but also it's more bang for their buck too.
Yeah. And ultimately, people are just getting more and more selective about what they're going to give to. There's a lot of nonprofits around, so you know there's an abundant array of choices. It's like waking up for coffee in the morning, like you got 10 choices to go for coffee.
Right.
You know, where I remember growing up where like you asked for a cup of coffee and they gave it to you, and it was the same kind of coffee you have everywhere else.
It's like cream and sugar, and that was your choice.
Yeah,
and all
exactly.
These choices of flavors. Like, wait, there's how many now?
But I think what it sounds like that you're talking about is getting those people to sort of drop some of those guards down, have a collaborative conversation, and some of that respect you got to earn, some of that you show through results. But I think people are looking for, I want to help, but I want it to work.
Absolutely, and I make fun of my United Way colleagues from other United Ways because we're a tight group. Like we have, you know, 1,400 United Ways across the United States, but a lot of us will interact with each other. We just develop kind of partnerships and friendships. And I'll rag on them. I always say, if your first slide to a donor base or to anybody shows, this is the amount we've raised, this is how many organizations we funded, and this is the total number population of, what is it, 30,000 people who are impacted by all this number, I said, you've lost everybody from that slide on, because people don't care about how much money you raise. They don't care how many organizations you help. They don't care the greater number. They want to know, what did you do?
Yeah.
and the slide should be reversed saying, this was the challenge we were faced with as a community, here's the impact we made, and here's what we're doing next, and here's how we held ourselves accountable during this process.
Yeah, and it's almost like a footnote at the end of how many dollars and how many people. That's like a stat.
Yeah.
It's not actually a base premise for why we do what we do.
Because people will fund the impact, and they don't care the organizations. They just want to fund the impact, especially the younger donors. They're not going to look at, well, you know, I've given to the United Way for 50 years, and I think I need to continue to give. But they're not generational givers like that. They're all about what impact
I'm on
making.
The phone, and I feel good right now about this particular program. I saw a news report about it. There's a need. I'm going to give them $50.
Exactly, 100% that way. And that's something these nonprofits, and ourselves included, are trying to adapt to that new generation of giving. And it really is about the impact, but also telling that story, like, why is this a need? Why is this a challenge? And how can all these people, even if it's a $10 donation or $10 million donation, what can that do to lead to the impact change that we're trying to create?
What are you finding now that you're in the region? We're the good news people. What are you finding that's positive? What do you like, and what do you enjoy, and who have you connected with?
I've connected with so many people, and I think probably the brightest moment thus far has just been everybody has been genuinely friendly in any community. So you can imagine the housing was tough to find when I first moved here. It was 3 months ago. So I'm in a house now, but for the first 2 months, I essentially was living in Airbnbs. And I said, you know what, I'm gonna be optimistic about this. So every 3 days I'd switch my Airbnb.
Really?
All these locations across all the way through Northwest Indiana. I mean, I was even in Knox. I was way the heck in, I was in Gary, East Chicago, Crown Point, down in Jasper, Newton, all the way to Portage, to Michigan City, everything in between. And I would
It's a fascinating way to get to know the region.
Yes, and I would go
I don't know that I do it myself, but it's cool as hell that you did it.
It was really neat, because like I would go out to like restaurants or pubs or bars just to see what locals are doing, and I'd ask them flat out. Say, hey, tell me about this, region. What do you like? And I was kind of like almost like a anthropologist doing a study.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're like a reporter. Do you want to work part-time?
Yeah.
We could use you.
And it was really informative to see, like, people would always say, well, people are really friendly. It was almost common.
Yeah.
People are really friendly here. They care about the community. Those were almost the two things I heard. And that was really encouraging for a CEO of a nonprofit. Going, okay, those are two of the biggest things I absolutely have to have. And it was really eye-opening. And just the willingness to want to be involved. I come from a community where it's, in Arizona is a very different state. It's the Wild West for a reason. It's people care about themselves and their family, and that's it, nothing outside. I mean, they have the lowest volunteerism rate and giving rate in the entire nation. And so coming to a community where
if your
neighbor's house burns down, you may not like that neighbor, it doesn't matter. You're going to put your differences aside to help your neighbor out. And I think that's what's really cool about this area.
Wow, it's awesome that you're finding that. When I moved here about 16 years ago, it was sort of a very similar thing. I'd ask people, so what do you like in town? Oh, I like this place, or I like that place, or I like this place up in Chesterton, or this is great. And people are quietly proud here, I would say, in Northwest Indiana. They don't brag about it. Sometimes they punch each other a little bit. But for the most part, they get along, and they're sort of a humble, hardworking crew.
I would say that too, and I think that's like some of the natural beauties of this place too, having Lake Michigan, but not being far from really anything. I mean, Chicago's just, people, they're indifferent to
Chicago. I grew up in Chicago. I love Chicago.
I love
it has its faults, like every other major city does, but I work downtown for the better part of my life, and I love it down there. The energy's just infectious. And I love being an hour away. It's really, really nice out here, but man, it's nice to be able to go into the city.
Gotta go see a concert or hockey game or something. It's right there. And, Michigan's not far. Even Louisville is not far. So you can go see the Kentucky Derby if you wanted. And things like that are within striking distance of not being, it's not like you have to drive 10 hours to get there.
What are your driving priorities in the next 6 months? It sounds like you're on a learning, listening tour.
Yeah, we're really, right now, we're in the middle of our strategic planning, so a lot of our community partners, they should be getting a survey out here in the next, I would say, 2 to 3 weeks. And I'll really be asking them, like, where do they see the United Way fitting into this whole change agent in our Northwest Indiana region? But we're really going to look at how do we develop as United Way. We know what we've done in the past cannot be sustainable. So there's some things we're going to have to change. And we're going to have to be more of that neutral change agent in our community. But also, how do we tell our story better in, into the community? How do we get out there and let donors know that we are making an impact? We've been here for a long time. This is our expertise. And that we're partnering with all these agencies. I think that's one thing that we're going to find out through our strategic plan of where we fit in.
Yeah. But you're ultimately learning, listening, and implementing.
Yeah.
You know, sort of boom, boom, boom.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I'm blessed because I came in with 26 wonderful staff. And my process, I wasn't sure what the staff are going to be like. So I was very fortunate when I started day one. I was like, oh boy. And I think they felt that tension too. Like, who's this new CEO? What's
yeah.
he going to
be?
And
not from here. So
yeah.
When we first launched Apple 14 years ago, one of the comments I would get is, well, who are you to tell us what good news yeah. Vapo is? You're not even from here. And I was like, well, I don't know. Your current media sort of does a lousy job of sharing the good stuff, so I'm just going to try to supplement it.
Yeah.
But it's when you're new, it's always somewhat unknown.
Yes, and so it's been great. I couldn't ask for a better staff and team, and that's really helped me, and really good board members, too, who have really introduced me to the community and been a part of this whole 90-day process of me learning about Northwest Indiana and always there from a text or phone call away if I have a question like, hey, I'm in this community, this seems odd, like they don't have a food bank or something like that or
yeah.
whatever it might be. And, oh yeah, they do, you didn't talk to the right person. Okay, thank
now
you.
I know.
Now
yeah.
I know, it's over there, gotcha.
And that's what it
really comes down to is almost everybody you find that works in a nonprofit are passionate people. They're not there for the money because let's just be honest, the money in the nonprofit world is not the greatest. They can make way more in the for-profit side of things, but it's not about that. It's about the passion that fills you. And I remember feeling that uncomfortableness in my previous role, my first month on the job, new to Arizona, and I'm at this their hugest rural event they have for the state's Rural Policy Forum, and there's tens of thousands of people from all over the rural parts of Arizona talking about different challenges, and happened to be out in this breakout session. I think there's probably 6,000 people in this auditorium, and they're talking about educational status of rural Arizona. And I remember being from Graham and Greenlee County, Arizona. That's where our service region was at the time. And they were saying, who's from these counties? And I raised my hand. Everybody from my county, they're sprinkled around. And they said, let's give them a hand for applause. They're the number one and number two rural communities in Arizona for graduation rate. And then they show the numbers. And I remember looking at 76%, 84% as the graduation rate on time numbers. And as a former educator, I've looked at that. And I didn't even think about it. I just started booing. And then the Department of Education person goes, who's booing? And I'm like, uh-oh. And then I stand up. I'm like, I am. And
yeah.
she goes, would you come down here, care to explain why? I said, yeah. I said, no offense, but that should be 100%. I said, because you might as well look at that number and say one in every five kids that you see, you just said as a community and a society that we gave up on them. Sorry,
yeah.
we gave up on you. I said, and you do know Arizona's.
And we're at the head of the class.
Yes.
Like if you're saying we're the best and we're 74,
yeah.
like literally we're
yes.
failing one of the every five kids and we're the hero?
Yeah. And then not only that, but I was like, and Arizona's dead last in education across the United States.
Yeah.
So we're the best of the worst. And I was like, this isn't okay. And I was
yeah.
like,
I don't want a plaque yeah. for this.
So I just said flat out, I said, until that number says 100%, until we can, as a state, move our needle forward, I will always boo that. I said, because there is no time but perfection for children. This is the future of our state, future of our country, future of our world. And I was like, I will never be apologetic about any of those things. And then it's funny because then everybody got up and started cheering
yeah.
me on. Because then it put the perspective on,
yeah.
like, yeah, why are we cheering as a positive? Like, this isn't really, it's great. I mean, if they went from 71% to 84% in 1 year, I'll cheer that all day. That's moving in the right direction. But
yep.
to be complacent where we're at has always been a fundamental problem of mine. And I see that a lot with organizations, businesses, cities, states, all across this country, is that we're okay with mediocrity and complacency. And I'll never be that person.
It's a giant pet peeve of mine.
Like, it is.
I just, these guys will tell you, I don't want to take a bad picture,
yeah.
ever, one picture. I'm going to wrap it up with saying, what do you want people to do that see this? Do you want them to go to the Facebook page, go to the website, come to an upcoming event, call you? How do you want the community to reach out to you to say, hey, I sort of like that thinking, that new way of thinking. I want to talk to him, or I want to talk to that organization. We should do work together.
Yeah, I mean, any of those avenues are great. We do have a Facebook, a website, phone number, personal email, things of that nature. And the way I look at this is I just want people to know that we're here to partner with them, not to tell them what to do. Because that is a failure if I do that. I really want them to be part of this conversation, to lead this conversation, and to drive this together. Because I can't, as an agency, we can't do it alone. We have to have everybody's involvement. And so whatever that looks like for agencies or businesses or individuals, that's what I want. And everybody has a voice as part of our organization. I want to reflect that out to the community as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you again
thank
for
you.
Coming. Yeah, I appreciate you having here. I wish you all the best of luck. Thanks, all.